Moncrief on News Talk.
Sex before coffee is a common phrase in Scandinavian countries, but in each of them, it means something slightly different. In Iceland, for instance, it's meant literally. The most notable thing about the Icelandic dating culture is that there isn't one. If they feel like doing it, they do it. And most shockingly of all, they don't even need to be drunk. The Guardian columnist Zoe Williams has been writing about this. Afternoon, Zoe.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. Now, am I right in this? They actually don't tend to ask each other out on dates.
Oh my gosh, they're unbelievable. I mean, a lot of the custom we would recognise maybe in Ireland and the UK, such as they sometimes get really super trashed and just get together at the end of a long night.
Cool.
But other things, like it's not unusual for them to meet up just to check each other out in a swimming pool.
Yeah, explain that. That's an interesting one. Is that like they're checking each other out physically? Very much so.
It's like, so I spoke to one woman who is sort of my age, like 50, and she said she never went out on dates particularly, but she did, if she thought she might like somebody, they would meet up in the swimming pool. They would kind of say yes or no. That would be the deal. They would have sex on the first date that wasn't a date. And I was like, don't you feel at all self-conscious? Like 50 years old, meeting someone for the first time in your bikini. And she was like, no. I prefer it that way, because if you like what you see, great. And if you don't, then we haven't wasted any more time.
Okay.
So there's a very low self-consciousness culture. And I think that is the bit that is most alien, certainly to me, which is that they're completely open. They shower naked in front of each other. They're not embarrassed. And that kind of feeds into a much more, I don't know, they're very promiscuous. They don't have any kind of morality attached to sex.
Yeah. No, but I assume that they wouldn't term it as being promiscuous.
But I think they wouldn't see it as an insult. So they might say, they say they've got a very permissive culture and a very liberal culture. But it is basically, you know, you don't have to do an elaborate courtship ritual. One person said to me, we don't have any history of courtship in Iceland. We were literally living in turf huts until the Second World War. And then we became a modern society in the 60 years since that. So if you think of all the kind of architecture around courtship, you know, we had the Victorian era, we had the 50s, we had the 30s, we had like movements where women wanted emancipation, but then counter movements where the patriarchy reasserted itself. And Iceland, he said, just did not go through that phase. They went straight from zero to modern.
Yeah.
And so what they've got is a kind of almost an agricultural view of dating, let's have sex, married to a kind of modern view, let's see how it works out.
Okay. And now, I mean, you did kind of allude to that slightly there, Zoe, but is this an example of the patriarchy failing miserably in Iceland, at least?
I think the patriarchy has pretty much failed in Iceland. Yeah. I mean, you know, some people a little bit older, like in their 60s, would say women still do more domestically. But most people, certainly most people, millennials and below, think of the genders as completely equal. So they don't, you know, if you think about a lot of the language and architecture around sexual restraint in Anglo-Saxon cultures, it's all about, you know, the women don't want to look like sluts and the men don't mind because slut isn't an insult applied to them. But that kind of creates a lot of gatekeeping around sex that, you know, guys are trying to get it and women are trying to say no. And even though that sounds so old-fashioned, I think that does still permeate the way we look at it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got a really equal culture, then the women are like, sure, if I'm into it and you're into it, why not?
Okay. And are there rules or even a set procedure about what's the difference between we've just slept together to we're actually a thing now, we're an item, we're exclusive, all that kind of thing?
No, this is what's so peculiar, because you think of it when you hear that, like, people will say they're meeting. They won't say, they won't even say friends with benefits. They won't say they're going steady. They won't say they're exclusive. They won't say they're serious. They won't say they're not serious. It's all like, let's not put a label on it. We're just meeting. And that can go on for a really long time. And they don't even, because Reykjavik certainly and everyone and all the other towns are so small, if you've hooked up with somebody and you like them, you know exactly where they're going to be the next night and the night after. So even though there's, it's a very low commitment culture, it's also a very fast moving culture. Reykjavik people are known particularly for, like, if they sleep together and then it goes fine, they'll often move in together after like a fortnight. So you just wake up in somebody's bed and just decide to sleep, to keep living with them. It's really, really kind of open and flexible in a way that I found completely alien.
Yeah. Now, is a factor here that the population of Iceland is so small that, like, literally everybody knows everybody?
It is. I mean, it's a tiny population. It's 400,000 people. So that's roughly the size of, I'm just trying to think. I mean, there are London boroughs that are bigger than that. Mm. So it's like minuscule. But I'm just thinking, I've definitely heard that from Irish people who've come over to London, that Dublin can feel much, much smaller and much more like everybody knows you and knows your business and can see what you're up to. But then the difference there is that the kind of judgments are different. So, you know, you in Iceland, everybody might know what you're up to, but then they might not necessarily mind whatever you're up to. The time it really comes unstuck is that if you're really into somebody and really fixated with them, you don't want the whole world to know about it. So you find in Icelandic kind of dating rituals, which they don't have, of course, that people who really, really like each other are ironically a little bit more shy and reserved and less likely to have sex than people who are just like, fine, yeah, you seem nice.
Yes, that is an odd one. Now, before somebody texts into the show here and says, did you know they have an app in Iceland where it tells you if you're a cousin to somebody? That's not actually true.
That everybody was super judgmental about that when I brought it up. They were like, oh, English people are always saying this, because apparently we are always asking them whether they have to check their genealogy before they sleep together. Nevertheless, right, there is definitely a thing. One person described his first girlfriend, taking his first girlfriend home, and his grandmother doing in her head the calculation to see how many cousins she was related by. And apparently, if you're a third cousin or more, that's fine. But a third cousin or less, that's not fine. So definitely there's a lot of stored folk memory about who's related to who. But essentially, if you're at the point when you're looking on an app, then you're probably distantly enough related that it's not going to matter.
Gosh, is there anything you can do if you really don't want, if you want to go on a date with someone and you don't want people to know about it?
I'm glad you asked, and I hope this means you're going to go out dating in Iceland quite soon. If you're a lot of people do actually, when they're on the apps, they focus on tourists because it's got a massive tourist industry. And if you're just hooking up anyway, you're not fussed if they're going to be around for a week or a month. And it does kind of take the pressure off of, like, the scrutiny, even if the scrutiny doesn't have any particular moral judgment attached to it. If, however, you want to go out, you don't want the whole swimming pool to see you, you don't want the bar to see you, everybody in the bar knows you anyway, then they tend to go driving, stop for, like, a really discreet little ice cream, and then just drive to a fjord.
Ah, right. That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Which I find like the opposite of a date from my point of view. Like, there's like, sure, a fjords are fine if you must, but that's not my idea of romance.
No, and not if you're in a car.
Exactly.
Sounds like dogging more than a date. Do people go to so in Iceland, if you say, do you want to go to the swimming pool, that always means kind of this quasi date. People don't go to the swimming pool just for a swim.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up as well, because actually it could mean literally anything. The first Swedish prime minister, the first Swedish female prime minister, which was only like a couple of decades ago, used to hold cabinet meetings in the swimming pool. Because they're so into, I mean, it's really, they're really, really into their swimming. And the swimming isn't all swimming. There's a kind of hot tub, there's a warm tub, there's a cold pool, there will be a bar around the edge. Often there will be a kind of sauna area. It's like a kind of adult soft play. basically.
Gosh.
So no, if you say to somebody, shall we go swimming? That doesn't necessarily mean that you're asking them if they want to have sex with you. But it's a very, very frank and straightforward culture, right? So I was just absolutely gobsmacked that every time I got into a conversation, and I wasn't, you know, obviously I was kind of trying to be discreet and subtle and tactful and all those words, but they immediately get to the point. So you know, you'll ask somebody if they've ever been on a date in the swimming pool, and they'll be like, "Yes, I went to the swimming pool with this man I had had sex with 2 days before. He was Czech. He didn't like it very much, but it was fine, and we had sex 3 further times." It's like, it's that straightforward. So the idea that you'll kind of get into a misunderstanding and you'll ask somebody for a swim and they'll get the wrong end of the stick, that's just not going to happen in Iceland. They're going to say exactly what they mean. And if they don't know what you mean, they're going to ask.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you mentioned tourism there. Have they ever thought of marketing Iceland in that way?
That is also a very good question, because they did in the early noughties, and I remember these adverts. They had Iceland Air was marketing straight to Brits the idea that it was the perfect place for a one night stand. There were kind of 3 main ones. One said Miss Iceland awaits, and that was more about kind of Icelandic people being very good looking, which they are, by the way. There was one that said, "Are you ready for your one night stand?" That's a pretty straightforward offer. And there was another one that was just a little bit more kind of euphemistic than that. Now, what was interesting about that is that the loads of feminist organizations in Iceland really objected to those, because while it's a very permissive and open sexual culture, when you kind of introduce a layer of innuendo and, if you like, kind of Anglo-Saxon nudge, nudge, wink, wink, viz culture, they're like, no, that's not the point at all. We're not here to be kind of mocked. So actually they sued Iceland Air, and Iceland Air only got away with that because they said it was marketed specifically to Brits, and Brits were just a much more coarse culture. And they won their case.
Now, are there any downsides to this, such as the Reykjavik handshake?
Oh my gosh. Again, I found this pretty chilling. I mean, not chilling, but The levels of chlamydia across Scandinavia, but in Iceland in particular, are astronomical. So when you talk about case prevalence in Cyprus would be 3 people per 100,000, which must be something to do with poor reporting, because that's quite unlike, that's very, very low. Across Scandinavia, it'd be like 500, 600 people per 100,000, which is a huge amount. And they did a study in 2017, which found that Icelandic people, the more people they reported having sex with from outside Iceland, the less likely they were to have chlamydia. So basically, if you diversified your risk portfolio, then you were sort of... you're kind of lowering your risk by choosing foreigners, which really is saying a lot. Yeah. Mind you, they again, because they've got such an open sexual culture, there's much less shame and embarrassment around it. And that means people are much more likely to seek treatment, which means then less likely to have the kind of long-term negative effects of chlamydia, which, of course, are much more common in more closed cultures where, you know, you can go 10 years having it and not knowing and then end up with fertility problems.
Mm. Did this rub off on you? Did you find, Zoe, I don't mean the chlamydia, I mean in terms of speaking frankly and openly about sex, did you find it easier as you went along?
I mean, you have to a little bit. You have to catch up, because you look ridiculous if you're going to be prudish. But what I found really difficult was the nudity culture. So I was in a swimming pool changing room doing some interviews, and this woman, the one with the Czech boyfriend who'd had sex 3 further times, She then said, "Are we going into the swimming pool?" And I was like, "Well, actually, I do have to go and check it out, but you have to shower before you go in." And she was naked. They're all naked, and you have to be naked. And we just had a really frank conversation, not just about her sex life, but about her body image, about literally everything. And then we had to strip off and have a shower together. And I have to admit, was quite embarrassed when that happened.
I would imagine so. Yeah, it's not every day you do an interview and then you get to shower together afterwards. Zoe, thanks a million for talking with us today. Zoe Williams' column about that is in The Guardian. Fascinating stuff. A few comments on that. So one person says, Icelanders have a very high life expectancy. Is it the diet, the fresh air, or just the riding? It's possibly all three. Someone else says, I wonder how many Irish singletons have just Googled swimming lessons and Airbnb in Iceland for the last 5 minutes. Maybe the Icelandic sexual liberalism has everything to do with the 2-to-1 women to men ratio. What chances is the poor patriarchy having a place like that? If there were equal numbers of the sexes, I bet they would be as sexually awkward as us Irish. Well, maybe. But there is, I think that it is true about the gender imbalance thing. Hold my coffee, I'm off to Iceland. Many other variants on that kind of comment. Icelanders have to check that they are not related. So, well, as we just heard, that's a bit of a myth. Your granny will do that for you. You'll be bringing someone home and your granny will go, hang on, what's your surname? Yeah, your grand. I moved to Norway when I was 23. I married a Viking 35 years ago, and I found the whole mixed sex sauna really funny. My in-laws had a beautiful summer cabin by the sea, and everyone, granny, granddad, kiddies, all swam naked and showered in the outdoor shower naked. I found it hilarious in the beginning, but then very quickly it became normal. That is so true. Many years ago, and I was doing a thing for the telly. It was in Sweden, I think, but it was kind of in the on the border. But anyway, the gist of it was that you went into the sauna and you boiled yourself for 20 minutes, and then you ran out of the sauna where they had knocked a hole into the North Sea, and then you jumped into the North Sea, whereupon you gave yourself a heart attack. But because we were doing it for telly, I had to have togs on. And I've never felt such a pervert in my life wearing togs when everybody else was looking at me going, there's your willy, kind of thing. It was a very strange sensation. That's what Gen Zs are like in Ireland, says the texter. There's a young girl who works with us, and she'll come in each Monday telling us who she had sex with at the weekend. Fair play to her. Wish I was like that when I was 30. And someone else says, sounds like the movie Midsommar. Are they luring gullible foreigners to Iceland on the promise of sex, only to burn them alive in a sacrifice to the pagan gods?
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.